is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. To Berlin, to Judy Dempsey of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, to comment here at the beginning of 2023, 10 months into the Ukraine conflict, what is to be done? Chiefly, with the concern here is rebuilding Ukraine in the projected future of after the conflict. The debate is in Berlin, I learned from a report at Bloomberg and other sources, but it is across the EU. What is to be done with the frozen Russian assets during the conflict? The number is huge, 300 billion euros so far, another 19 billion euros said to be attached to Russian bad actors, the oligarchs who have assets in the EU. The debate is widespread across many countries, 27 countries, but it comes down to three positions in Berlin itself and then an outside position from the U.S. Chancellor Olaf Scholz wants a coordination with all the EU member states, not Germany acting alone or precipitously. Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock of the Greens very much wants to explore this to rebuild Ukraine with Russian assets. On the other hand, the finance minister, Christian Lindner, representing the larger business community during the campaign, expresses caution. That caution is mirrored or at least echoed in Washington, where the Biden administration is pressed to go forward with this planning for using the frozen assets to rebuild a devastated Ukraine and its economy and its people. It is mentioned in the irony that there is already a precedent in the United States because €3.5 billion were frozen after the Afghanistan withdrawal by NATO and the U.S., now being administered by the Bank for International Settlement. So, Judy, I turn to you. Is this now a pressing issue in Berlin? What is to be done to rebuild Ukraine, to give hope to the people of Ukraine, who are now scattered all across the country, internally displaced, and throughout Europe? A very good day to you, Judy.
A very good day to you, John, and a happy and safe new year. The issue is certainly being discussed here in Berlin, but it's just not going to lead anywhere at the moment. Now, there are many member states, especially the Baltic states and Poland and others, that actually do want the assets used and seized by Russia to rebuild Ukraine. And there's already big reconstruction plans being drawn up. But this is not going to happen if Germany doesn't take a united lead. And Chancellor Scholz, who's a leading member of the Social Democratic Party, he said, well, we have to coordinate with this with the other EU member states. He says this thing for arms deliveries for Ukraine also. The point is he's not willing to take a firm stand on this. In contrast, the Green Foreign Minister, Annalena Baerbock, she really is quite clear about this. Russia should pick up the bill for the extraordinary damage they have done. Whereas the pro-business liberal finance minister, Christian Lindner, is very cautious, thinking maybe in the long term, how are you going to get consensus on this? But he has tended to be cautious on these issues. Being finance minister, he would be.
The way forward is to imagine a future without the conflict zone. However, I want to explore what Germany, in general opinion now, out of Berlin, is thinking about the present conflict. Because there are so many mixed opinions. It's fog of war. I don't generalize. But in any event, the arms continue, we're told, to flow into Ukraine. And Germany's participating in the arms. Germany's also participating in making pledges about achieving 2% of its GDP for rearmament or for military security affairs. Is that debate going forward, whether weapons, offensive weapons, lethal weapons should be shipped to Ukraine from the German stocks, and whether the German arsenal should grow at 2%. Is that a settled matter or still in dispute?
Nothing is settled because the German military and the defense ministry is in a shambles. And even if there's talk about spending 2% of gross domestic product, they haven't got the equipment, they haven't got the training, they haven't got the political will, there's duplication, there's a huge bureaucracy. And it's very easy to blame the defense minister, Christine Lambrecht. But frankly, anybody who heads the defense ministry is becoming a poisoned ministry, because there isn't the real political will to make strategic decisions, not only about NATO and Ukraine, but strategically about Germany's position when it comes to military affairs. So the issue is still open. The arms deliveries is still open. The spending is still open. And it comes in the backdrop of that tanks that were supposed to be modernized and used, they just don't function.
You wrote a very discerning post for Carnegie and other places at the beginning of December, asking a controversial question. Are Germany and France wavering on Russia? This comes down to the leadership, Macron in Paris and Schulz in Berlin. Wavering is a very strong word. Is it that Mr. Schulz cannot act, I'll concentrate on Berlin, cannot act without collective agreement that the role of chancellor is not to be a leader but to be a presider? Is that why there's question about Germany?
There's a question more about Schulz rather than Germany. And the issue about Schulz is the issue of his party. And the Social Democratic Party are divided over how to deal with Ukraine, how to defend Ukraine. They are divided over should there be negotiations with Russia. They're divided over Russia. Some are pacifists. Others want a much more robust kind of leadership, which Scholz is really very reluctant to take on. So essentially, if Scholz did actually come out clean and exercise leadership, I think it would actually quieten down or at least weaken the sense of arguing and disunity inside his party. So maybe he does have to preside, but the longer he presides, the more Germany is criticized for just not giving the leadership that Europe actually needs.
Yes, 10 months into the war, then, let's turn to what the road ahead. One is escalation. The U.S. is now talking about sending light tanks called Bradleys to the battle zone. Mm-hmm. They're also generally understood that the Patriot missile system will be made available to Ukraine, and longer and more lethal rockets, I believe, I lose track of how many or what kind, are always being discussed in Washington. Is that supported in the German government, that the U.S. is turning up the arsenal to make it more and more possible for Ukraine to entertain retaking Crimea? Does that upset Berlin?
Publicly, no. Privately, yes, definitely. Because there is a section of in the political class that believes that, the more you supply weapons to Ukraine, the more the whole war will escalate. Well, the other side will say, the Greens will say, Annalena Baerbock, the foreign minister, will say, well, who has been escalating this in any case? But essentially, the consensus is that America has taken the lead, America is arming Ukraine, and America is pushing its NATO and European allies to do likewise. And Germany is very uncomfortable about this.
The uncomfortable part, that introduces the possibility, or at least the Reuters report, the suggestion that Russia or Russia's sympathetic voices are active in Germany. Do you see this a trend, or is it an outliers, radicals who get attention because they're so peculiarly against everybody?
There's no doubt about it that in parts of the eastern states of Germany, there's extraordinary, having lived under the communist system, they're quite pro-Russian and support Putin. The figures are very hard to come by, but there's a sentiment there. This is the first thing. Secondly, there are how many, over 1 million, 2 million Russians living in Germany, and it's hard to actually think or even know if there was any demonstrations in support of the Ukrainians. There's been odd big Russian flags flying in support of Russia. But it's extraordinary, the silence of the Russians here in Germany. And this gets back to your question. It's a very ambiguous situation here for the Russians. And remember, they occupied Eastern Germany. And now we have cases where there's Russian sympathizers, Russian spies inside the intelligence services, which is not surprising. And I'm sure it's in the intelligence services across most of the EU countries and in other countries as well. But this is simply there, and you do get these voices. And it's something that the government is aware of, and they're trying to set up some more surveillance of the ministries to make sure leaks aren't getting out and that espionage is not going to get out of control here.
A puzzling question. It's in the form of a whodunit. Is the Nord Stream destruction 1 and 2, is that an ongoing story in national news in Germany or in the newspapers?
No, that is now over. And it's very interesting that there was a little tweet done by the German embassy in London this morning saying that before the war, before Russia invaded Ukraine, Germany imported 50% of its gas from Russia and a huge percentage of its oil from Russia. And if you, and now it says now January 2023, zero imports of energy from Russia. And in fact, thanks to the Green Economy and Climate Minister, Robert Habeck, Germany has moved so quickly to build LNG terminals, to speed up renewables, and to diversify its energy imports. And that's the interesting thing. They have survived without Nord Stream, despite Putin's calculations that they wouldn't.
And that is a surprise and a happy surprise. I mean, unintended consequences of an economy that was in transition to renewables. You suggest, of course, we should introduce immediately where Germany is about its energy needs, not only this winter, which, according to the reports from Italy, is extremely warmish. The glaciers are in retreat, but most importantly, the Alps, the ski runs in the Alps are drying up or not available, so that there's economic distress for winter skiing. But this, of course, suggests that there's warmer than usual temperatures here at the beginning of winter, but next winter and the winter after that. I see now and again there is a reservation about declaring a victory over the energy needs. And I'm reading in English, is that also true in German, that the winter of 24 is going to be the test?
And the big unknown factor is that if energy prices, which are very high at the moment, if they gradually decline, will people, the population, actually consume more energy now? Because the energy crisis and the higher prices combined meant that households and enterprises were actually forced to reduce their energy consumption. And the balance now that the German government wants to ensure is that have enough energy, have the storage facilities full, but ensure that if the price does fall, people not feel relieved and turn up the heaters again. So this is one issue that is out there. And the other issue is that it's very tricky. I mean, China, I mean, leaving aside the whole COVID crisis in China now, if the Chinese economy manages to pick up, it's going to need more energy. And if it's going to import more energy, it's going to put a squeeze on certainly a European capacity to import, and certainly prices will go up as demand rises. So it's a very difficult balancing act, and one really doesn't know how next year will pan out, I mean 2024. But if they can keep this balance right, maybe European countries will survive this energy crisis and come out of it stronger.
Judy Dempsey of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. She's the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.